about winning trophies. I'm inexperienced in a lot of those things.
Can you believe it?
Almost lost the cup and you win it. The new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. That's the winner.
Welcome to the American Red Devils podcast. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And we are bringing you the best Manchester United news from this side of the pod.
Oh, sir. How you doing? It could have been the best news. Unfortunately, it's just news.
Sir.
Tough draw.
It's a tough draw, but you know what? United, they played well. The lads came out. They put in a challenge. They fought for every blade of grass, at least for the first 70 minutes. All United coming into this game, you have to say that's a great... great performance from Manchester United, other than one bad play by Rojo and Young.
There's been a lot of instances where we questioned this team's dedication to the craft. I don't think we did that against Liverpool, so it was good to see the boys give it their all. I think the legs did tire on them in the second half, though. They did fade, unfortunately. So we really, really missed that squad depth when we had not a lot of options on the bench, sir.
Yeah, and I think we made some adjustments to sit deep. I think that invited more pressure from Liverpool. They got lucky. Look, Liverpool got lucky. The best Liverpool side in 30 years gets lucky and can only draw the worst Manchester United side in 30 years. Sir.
So,
you know, that is that tweet I saw, I'm not taking credit for that line online. That sums it all up, right? So Liverpool, they're the best team of all time, going to win the league, and they come to Old Trafford against the worst United side. Can't be bothered. Only a draw. United should have won. Even Sonis said United should have won, sir. When he's saying we should have won, it was written in the stars.
It was in our hands, sir, like a clasping of sand, and it just went through our fingers at the very end. It was unfortunate stuff. A late goal given up by some lackadaisical defending, sir. Not great. Just to tap in for Lallana. Gut-wrenching. Gut punch for everybody on their Sunday.
Look, Liverpool were turning the screws. You know, we shook them. We played high press, got to every single ball. We outworked them, and that they were rattled. They had no rhythm. And then when we started sitting back, you could see that Liverpool kind of fluidity come back. Klopp on the sideline looking like a fool the entire game. Cameras love Klopp. Ole gets like a tenth of the camera time Klopp does, so.
Teeth are too big for his mouth.
Crazy.
It doesn't make any sense.
The crazy German running up and down the sidelines. Of course, we're talking about Manchester United 1, Liverpool 1. Hell of a match, sir. Let's jump into the lineup. Ole finally changes the tactics with the 3-4-3. We had Dave Saves, the world number one in net. Marcus Rojo, he came in for Twanzebe, who was injured in the warm-up. Harry Maguire in the middle of the center backs. Victor Lindelof on the right. Midfield four, Ashley Young, Fred, Scott McTominay, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Would Fred come good this game? Is this the time he's going to break out? No. Rashford, Pereira, and James Pereira playing at number 10 looked amazing as well. So finally play him in his more natural position. Pereira looked absolute lights out. What do you think about this lineup when it came out?
I mean, I was happy to see Ole actually make a tactical change and not go for the 4-2-3-1 again. Back three made sense given what kind of game plan he was likely to go with. You know, absorb pressure and be able to go on the counterattack with speed up at Dan James and Rashford up front. So I was looking forward to it. I thought this was a pretty good lineup for Ole to throw out given who he had available.
Yeah, I mean, I it's more like could be a 3-4-1-2, could be a 3-5-2. I mean, Ole, we looked much better in this formation. The players looked comfortable. Their shape was good. Even Mourinho complimented that in the post game. And this is what I think we needed. We needed to freshen it up. What a better time to do it than at home. Dan James came out of the gates like rip roaring. He had a head injury midweek. It looks like he got two more in this game, but that little lad is tough. And he will, the challenges he put in, he has no concern for his body. I think a lot of the players definitely felt his energy on the pitch.
The absolute warrior up and down the pitch all day. Andres Pereira is another one that had a game. Played absolutely the best I've seen in a United kit. They looked confident. They looked like they could absorb the pressure, play out from the back.
Bissaka,
and we ran all over the pitch. You know, it was good to see them put the effort in because there's been so many games this season where there's just been a lack of energy and they were high tempo, high pace, and they were bringing that press to them from the very beginning, which was the key to putting Liverpool on the back foot and getting them rattled.
And look, in the 36th minute, we've been battling, and the ball finally bounces our way for an attacking goal at home, sir.
Crossing McTominay to go and close the ball down twice. Bad communication.
McTominay releases James. Rashford making a run towards the back post, and he scores! He went near post, then he cut to the far post, and Marcus Rashford finishes brilliantly for Manchester United.
Unbelievable finish from Marcus. Even better ball from Dan James. The Welshman, the Welsh kid, sir, does it right with that right boot pass into Marcus Rashford. Who would have thought?
Scoring on the break, as we like to do. Great ball from Dan James. Good finish and good positioning from Marcus Rashford. And how about Liverpool players complaining like they do about the no tackle on Origi. That's all they got is just bitching and moaning, sir. That's the number one go-to for them these days.
Look, it was the referee said play on. He says play on. Manchester United score a great goal. Rashford, that finish is harder than it looks, but an amazing ball by Dan James. This is what we're looking for. Hit him on the counter, hit him on the break, score a goal, and try to open the game up and then score the finisher, sir. We needed that next goal. That's something that you could kind of tell going at halftime. We were lucky to be, Liverpool didn't have too many chances, and we were lucky that they couldn't really put any string of passes together and really attack us in a coherent manner. So, but what do you think? Should we come out in the second half? Should we defend? Should we attack? What were your thoughts?
I think you got to do more of the same. You keep that press going, right? That was obviously taking Liverpool out of their game a little bit, and you have to keep trying to offer that counter when you do get the ball and attack at speed like we did so often. But I think what happened is, as the second half wore on, sir, our legs just started going.
And looking to the bench, Ole had nobody, so we brought in no subs. It was very, as far as like in the first 90 minutes of the match, there was no subs. Looking to the bench, Garner, who could come on, Mata, Greenwood, Ole reluctant to kind of switch things up for Manchester United. Finally brings in Martial, then he brings in Williams. You can tell our bench is pretty thin, so at the end of the day, he had Jones. Why don't you put Jones in? If you're going to shore things up, I like that sub, but we kind of were fading, and Ole again did not, make advantage of a change.
And it's disappointing to see the squad tiring the way they did. It feels like it's been, generations since we've had a team that could run out 90 minutes no problem and still have energy to burn. But we were visibly tiring by the 70th minute, and we'd like to see a sub earlier in that game.
First of all, Martial came in the 84th. Williams came in the 94th, right? James looked completely beat up. So I think James should have been subbed, not Rashford. Apparently, Rashford had a knock. That's why Martial came in. But in the 84th minute, really, we have Mata, we have Garner, Greenwood, and we have Jones. I think one of those has to come in the 60th. You put in Martial in the 65th. You put in Jones in the 70th. This helps you from a tactical perspective. Maybe you move to a back four. Maybe you go 4-4-2. I don't know exactly, but something needed to be done. And it looked like all we did was invite more pressure from Liverpool as we got more tired. We either needed to freshen the attack or freshen the defense. We did neither. And clearly, after a long game, Rojo and Ashley Young were shut off, and we had to watch Adam Lallana tap in the ball at the back post. I'm not even going to play the audio. It's not even worth anything. Ball just squeezes through everyone. Marcus Rojo, nowhere to be found, and Lallana taps in. Also watching Fred in the second half, I thought he was a complete liability. Passing the ball, losing the ball. Did it in the first half, but United were playing so well that he could get away with it. In the second half, I thought you had to yank him. I was looking for Matic, but obviously he wasn't even on the bench. Fred, that was a sub that needed to be made. He was making overlapping runs on the mid through. Scott McTominay's in the center. Fred's literally playing defense on the left and right side of him, completely out of position.
He was all over
his
place.
His head spinning. He goes in for the rash challenge and gets beat. I do think Fred was a liability, but again, showing that even with this team, even being injured without Paul Pogba in the midfield, we can take the best team in the league and make them look pretty shit at Manchester United.
Yeah, on our day, we can certainly bring it to anybody. So you've just not enough on that constant effort and constant enthusiasm for the craft. So, hey, it's a tough result to swallow. We would have liked those 3 points, 1-0. Victory.
We would have liked. Loved those 3 points. Yeah, sir. I was already gearing up to text my Liverpool friends. We need those 3 points to get out of the relegation battle. First of all, that's number one priority. Number two was just because we had to beat those Scouse bastards, and to tie is, sir, it just...
That goal, you know, too. It wasn't like they scored a banger. It was a tap in the far post just for some lackadaisical defending. There's nothing that is a more bitter pill to swallow when you have the victory so close within your hands. It was just, it was right there. And it just...
We talked about it on the phone.
All season has been like this.
And your first reaction was like, it's this season. This season just, it is what it is. You know, it's like, we play great against Liverpool, we draw. We play well against Arsenal, we draw. I mean, games we should win, we're tying or losing. Games that we shouldn't win, we're losing huge, are losing to Newcastle away. It's just nothing's going our way. When the lads choose to show up against Liverpool, we get a draw. Why don't we show up against Newcastle, get an easy 3 points, maybe lose against Liverpool? As far as just the position of the team, nothing really is going our way. And there's only so much of that we can take. And then the VAR gods were on our side today, though. The VAR.
No, we appreciated that. Yeah, that was something that we got from the universe. I didn't say that in the last pod.
I was like, the VAR gods have to go come to our rescue.
And they did smile down with a handball on Mane, which was fortuitous. But it's just a tough result from a tough season, and it feels like we just started. I mean, it's only October, sir. It's like we got a lot of games left.
This has been the most ups and downs of the season. I mean, primarily downs, but this has been one of the hardest seasons, hardest starts for Manchester United, obviously since like the late 80s. And for me, as being a fan, I can't remember it like this. But with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer getting the boys up for a match, clearly we were talking some fans, Ole out. Haven't heard any of that in the Twitterverse. What do you make of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer switching it up, getting the lads up for a game and changing the tactics and like United playing well? Is it too little too late? Is it exactly what we needed? Did he need to get the win to win over the fans and the board? Is it all on Norwich?
I think this performance went a long way to building him a little cover, because there's been a lot of talk about just like what kind of piss poor turnouts we've seen week in, week
out.
Hold on.
Is that 3-game cover, 10-game cover? I'm going to say that
he gets a couple more games.
It was Norwich or bust. Now it's probably, you know, we're going to Bournemouth.
Norwich and Bournemouth are pretty important games. I mean, Norwich is not a team that should be beating us. So if we go there and lose to Norwich, I think he's going to be right back on the block.
Yeah, depending how, and injuries have been obviously tough, but again, no excuses on that front. But hey, look, we had a quick Liverpool match recap. This is a special podcast. So we got Phil Brown from the Beyond the Pitch podcast. He also features on Talk Sport. You guys probably follow him on Twitter. He is a top Manchester United fan living in California, originally from Ireland, sir. We got to interview him moments ago in the American Red Devils podcasting bunker.
Great lad. Lots to say. Great, interesting take. And, you know, being a Manchester United fan in the UK and then coming to the US in 2003. So he's got a great take on Manchester United and all the innards and what's going on behind the scenes. So a very interesting pod.
Yeah, and we've been fans of Phil for a long time, and it was great to have him on. Talks about Liverpool, all things United. Great perspective. So without further ado, we're going to jump in to the interview.
Yeah, great when you want.
All right, Phil, welcome to the podcast. Not that fun. How you doing?
Pleasure, lads.
If our research is correct, you're Irish, right?
Good research. Yes, I'm born and raised in Belfast, so yes, Irish, and I live in Southern California.
When did you make the move to the States?
Ooh, 2003, I think it was, somewhere around there. So I've been here quite a while now. I've been here about 15, 16 years. But I usually get home, maybe once or twice a year. So I still have a lot of connections to over there.
Nice. And just being a football fan, what was the biggest adjustment you had to make when you moved to the States, getting up early? I mean, 2003, was that Fox Soccer back in the day?
Yeah, it was. It was Lionel Bienvenu. When we first came out here, you basically, you had ESPN coverage of Champions League. You got one game, and honestly, it was like finding the Holy Grail, just getting a game live. And then Fox bought the rights to the highlights, and you would get a 2-hour highlight show at the weekend with Lionel Bienvenu, and honestly, it was amazing. And then obviously it went from there to live coverage, and really since, and I have to give Fox a lot of credit here, because they were the pioneers, down at Macquarie, were really the pioneers to bring in football on TV, Premier League football on TV in this country, and led the way, and they've done a fantastic job when they acquired the Premier League.
No, absolutely. And like, if you look at today with NBC, they're kind of reaping the rewards of Fox early on. I know you're alluding to that one Champions League game. I definitely, that's when I became a United fan back in the day when it came on ESPN. But what do you think of the growing Manchester United fan base in the United States right now? I mean, started 2003, probably not many Manchester United fans now. I mean, for in the United States, probably a couple million, right?
Oh, easily. I mean, I think this is mirrored by the growth of the NFL in Europe. I mean, when I was back in Ireland in July, and you know, they've got old games on the screens in the bars and stuff you never would have seen years ago. And I'm seeing friends my age, you know, who had no exposure to the NFL at all and really had no interest in it, now developing an interest in the NFL. And obviously, the internet has a lot to do with this, that has made the world much smaller. And clubs, NFL teams, Premier League clubs have used each other for cross-branding purposes to make sure they get exposure to each other's audiences. And so when you look at, you know, the NFL, in my opinion, probably besides WWE, are the best marketers of sports in the world. The Premier League's way behind the NFL, but the Premier League tries to copy the NFL. I mean, I remember talking to Emilio Butragueño at Real Madrid, and when they were out here, and he was telling me that he worked for the Dodgers for a year and learned all about marketing, sports marketing, about branding, and took that back to Madrid. And of course, that's what the Premier League have done. So I think, given the internet, sorry, this is a long answer, but given the internet, given all the exposure across the UK, Europe, and here, it's not surprising. The other aspect of this, of course, is video games. FIFA has had a huge impact on developing young kids and their knowledge of football in this country.
It's true. I can remember a bright-haired, red-headed midfielder that got me into Manchester United, Ginger Prince himself. So, you know, FIFA had an impact for sure.
She absolutely did.
Speaking of Manchester United, Phil, how did you become a United fan growing up?
Ooh, well, first of all, where I grew up was extremely rough. It was very violent. And so I was in the middle of a war, I suppose. And so we had very little growing up as kids. We had, you know, a relatively poor upbringing. So Manchester United were a team that always had Irish players, always had a strong number of Irish players, with tremendous connection between Manchester United and Ireland. And there always has been. So you look back then when I was growing up as a kid, there was Norman Whiteside, who was from North Belfast, which is exactly where I'm from. You know, you had George Best before that. You had so many, Mal Donaghy, you had so many Irish players in that team, Paul McGrath, Kevin Moran. For me, it was, I loved that part, but when I saw the red, white, and black, there was a glamour to that that was unmatched by Liverpool at the time. And my two brothers were Liverpool fanatics. And of course, at that time, in the 80s, Liverpool were dominating, they were winning everything. But United had a glamour to them that captivated me as a child. And I loved the red, white, and black. It's very difficult to describe how you love something. You know, it's very difficult to describe how you love your child or your mother, whatever. You never quite seem to get at it. But United just captivated me as a child. There were so many different reasons. And they gave me something to dream that one day I could play for United and get out of the madness that it was in. So it's always been something. United, weirdly, have always been very important to me. And diverting me from hard things in my life. I mean, so it's hard to describe, guys, but it goes back a long way from when I was 5 years old.
Wow, going a ways back, and looks like you got on the ship right at the right time as Liverpool, where their domination would end and Manchester United would rise. But jumping into everything, Manchester United, what'd you make of yesterday's match? Just want to get your thoughts on the draw and what you made of the performance, Klopp versus Ole.
Well, I thought going into the game, I feared the worst. There was really no reason to have any belief that United would go out there and put a performance in. You know, we consider Mourinho lost his job after playing Liverpool in what was an abject surrender. There was no reason to expect United would go out against Liverpool at home and give you what they gave you. There's a lot of things you can forgive as a fan. You can forgive a player not being good enough. You can forgive players having a bad game, but you can't forgive players not being professional and being fit. And that's been a serious problem at Manchester United for a long time. I really don't understand why that's the case. I don't know how many times we've seen under Mourinho the team not being able to see out games because they weren't fit. And he only finished two seasons, and in both of those seasons, he didn't have a squad strong enough to see out the season. He had to prioritise games for supposedly the biggest football club in the world. That's ridiculous. And you saw yesterday, United, last 20 minutes were exhausted. You saw Wan-Bissaka was injured, Harry Maguire was injured, Rashford was carrying an injury, and you could see that they weren't fit. I don't understand this, but they gave everything. That's all I can ask for. More fun. They gave me everything. They should have won the game. Klopp, I really don't understand what his problem is. And
I think he's got a few.
Too many teeth.
I'm trying to understand. Is he disappointed United didn't put 10 men up front and let Liverpool score?
Yeah, I think he seems to complain about the wind, you know?
Yeah, well, so United scored. They played a game plan of sitting deep and hit them on the break, which ironically I think cost them, because in the end, when Nigel Young was playing higher up the field, he wasn't have to concentrate on defending. As soon as United dropped deep, he had to concentrate on defending. And when you play a winger at left back, they understand the game, but the part they don't understand is the part you can't coach. And they need to sense danger. And attacking players don't sense danger on the other end of the box. They switch off. And you saw that Lallana runs right past Ashley Young, right over his shoulder, which has been done to him many, many times this season. And conceded a goal because he's ball watching. So really disappointing how United ended the game. But all in all, I can't complain with the performance and the result.
Not at all. And when I watched it, the one thing I did appreciate was the lads going in for a strong challenge, right? That's something I haven't seen all year. They've been shying away, and all of a sudden, Liverpool, they're actually putting in a boot. And I really did appreciate that. It made a difference.
Yeah. Well, I was interviewing Brian Robson and Andy Cole before the game. And I was asking Brian Robson about why we don't see this anymore. And obviously, the game has changed. You can't tackle somebody anymore, or it's a free kick, yellow card almost immediately. So players have had to be smarter in how they do this. You see Man City are really smart. They don't do the crunching fouls. They do the tactical fouls. And you won't get away with the Brian Robson flying tackles anymore. But I will say, lots of encouragement in Scott McTominay and how he uses his physique, throws himself about. He's still not technically 100%. He's only 22. He's still got a lot to learn, a lot to develop. But very encouraging signs from him. And physically, United haven't always been good enough to match the opposition. They were good enough yesterday, and I'm quite pleased with what we saw.
And where do you stand on VAR, Phil?
Okay, so when VAR was first being suggested, I was all in favor of it. I thought, you know what, we need to get the big decisions right. And my view on that hasn't changed. We need to get the big decisions right. But I think I'm starting to have second doubts and second thoughts about it.
And I think it's the branding.
I just think that this fascination with getting absolutely everything right, you know, it's killing the creativity of the game, the natural spontaneity of the game. That, you know, I've seen goals given offside for someone's shin guard being offside. That's absurd to me. I don't think we need that. I think what we need is if someone, like, for example, Darren Fletcher misses a European Cup final for getting a second yellow card in a match against Arsenal that never should have happened, right? That should be overturned. Thierry Henry's handball, that should be overturned,
right?
Major decisions. But when you're calling
Mane handball in the box,
correct? But you know, but here's the thing with that, and I don't understand what the issue is. Deliver or not, he gains an advantage by handling the ball. You have to give it. And you know, Jurgen Klopp, when he talks about VAR, seem to have a foggy memory when Leicester just 2 weeks ago were given a penalty against them in the very, very last kick of the game that VAR gave generously to Liverpool and also missed Trent Alexander-Arnold's horrendous stamp on Yuri Tielemans, which of course Jurgen didn't have much to say on. He did have a lot to say on Choudhury's tackle on Salah. Didn't have a lot to say on Fabinho's elbow on Daniel James yesterday. look, where do I stand on it? I think that there's beauty in the abstract. I don't want to be philosophical here, but I think that we don't need to get everything right to enjoy the spectacle. And when you're taking away that spontaneity of celebrating a goal and you're going, hang on a minute, is he going to give it? Is he not going to give it? Is he not going to give it? And you're almost waiting 5 seconds before you celebrate because you're not sure if he's going to get called back. That to me is ridiculous. The alleged free kick supposed to have happened yesterday in Origi. First of all, not physical contact is a free kick. Yeah, okay. Right. And when you're shoot it down, it looks a lot worse than what it happens in real time. You get sometimes someone's boot is going to touch you in a football match. It's not always a free kick.
Yeah, dude, I'm not going to – Origi can cry all day long about that one. Yeah. Switching to the managers a little bit, what is the – and since you're from across the pond, you can comment on this. What is the British media's bias about their opinions of managers? So, like, Klopp can't do any wrong. He's been on the pitch celebrating, does outlandish things. And then Mourinho does, like, you know, waves at the crowd wrong, and he's, like, the number one villain. He's getting headlines written across – the UK. Why do they all like managers and then hate managers?
Well, this is the media, and they build you up to knock you down, and it all depends on certain variables. Depends if you're winning. If you're winning, you can get away with almost anything. If you're a top club and you're not winning, and you tend to be grumpy, you tend not to acquiesce with the media. When you're not in a good mood, you get negative headlines written about you, so you get a vicious cycle. To be honest, when it comes to the British media, I think the British media, and a lot of them are my friends, I like them, but I think that, let me choose a charitable way of saying this.
Take your time.
The vast majority of them feel dramatically at doing their job for a quid pro quo system of to protect access, we are not to report on things that need to be reported on. And I think that's really extremely sad. I think when you're lauding Manchester City for winning trophies and for how well Pep Guardiola spent, but yet refusing to shine a light on absolutely heinous conduct of their owners and how he came about to acquire the club and stuff like that.
And how he doesn't answer the questions. Pep doesn't even answer those questions either.
You know what? But the thing is, there's a bigger story at Manchester City that's overlooked. Same with Chelsea. You know, high on earth, Roman Abramovich, how many business rivals of his has ended up dead? You're basically having a football club owned by the mafia.
A lot of accidents.
Yeah, and so you've got a football club that's basically owned by someone who's up to his neck and all sorts of skullduggery, who is proven fraudster, and yet we get the British media lamenting Tommy Abraham's miss.
Yeah.
I mean, man, this is ridiculous. Like, this is an easy target. So why did they pick on them? They pick on them because they're easy targets, because they really don't want to do their job of reporting on things that actually should be reported on, because they want to protect access. And yeah. I find that really sad.
Yeah, it seems like that. Certain people are untouchable.
Of course.
Phil, how would you rate Ole so far? Do you think the board made the right decision in appointing Ole when they did?
Look, it's very easy to say no today. People need to remember where you know that we're at. After when they sacked Mourinho, the club's at a really low ebb, and they needed someone to come in and lift the place. They didn't pick Solskjaer because of his incredible managerial ability. They got lucky in that sense. He did come in, he had a tremendous managerial bounce. And in March, after United beat PSG, it was almost the complete opposite of where they were after they beat Liverpool. And when United as a football club gain momentum, it's a monster. It consumes everything. It consumes all the press. The shirt sales go through the roof.
Always on the wheel.
Yeah, well, so it was, I emailed Ed Woodward right after the PSG game, and his response to me was, something special is happening. And they got caught up in it a bit. And, of course, they also had to decide, we've got to make a decision now because we've got the summer coming. And we need to be able to know exactly what we're doing. But In the end, United ended up making a mess of the appointment anyway and not using that period to plan for the summer. They still didn't make their first summer sign until, I think it was, they made Daniel James. But after Daniel James, they didn't sign anyone until the end of July, which is absolutely ridiculous. And, of course, United are paying for their parsimony today by not signing players that they needed to sign. And so where do I stand on it? I think they gambled. It paid off in the beginning. They didn't support him properly in the summer. And everything, United, every decision is determined by profit and loss. They will be looking at Solskjaer now saying, do we really want to hand this guy a bunch of money in January when when he probably won't be here in the summer? They won't care how the fans feel. They will care about what makes sense financially. Where they have to be really careful, boys, is United's new shirt sponsorship is about to, they're in the process of securing bids for a new shirt sponsorship. It's bad for the brand for United to be where they are. They desperately need to turn it around. Ed Woodward, who does not give interviews, gave an interview to an odd outlet in United We Stand in a fanzine. And I have my own thoughts on that. Nonetheless, he did it. And he clearly feels under pressure. And look, when the light was shined on Woodward and the board back in last year, December of last year, Mourinho was sacked the next day. So Woodward can't sack Solskjaer yet because it would expose them completely as not knowing what they're doing. And
I think he's exposed. You know, if you're reading the tea leaves, most well, he's some been fans exposed, think.
But. He's definitely been exposed, but now United find themselves in a really awkward situation because they've got a manager they aren't really convinced of. But here's the thing. They don't know a good manager from a bad one. And so when you've got a board who doesn't understand why you can't go from Van Gaal to Mourinho because they're completely opposite managers who'll want completely different players, then that tells you they have no idea that the favorite to replace Solskjaer is Allegri. Allegri could not be more different than Solskjaer. He's a defensive coach. He's going to want Mourinho-esque players. And it'll be revolution again, which is, of course, why they need director of football. But United haven't got a single football decision right since Ferguson left the club. It's like Brewster's Millions at the top.
They're going like straight one direction. And if you look at the stock price, it says the same thing. You mentioned it briefly. We wanted to ask you what you thought of Woodward's recent interview. I'm just going to take one quote. We absolutely feel we're on the right track to getting back to winning trophies. And that's what Ed Woodward said in that interview. So your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's true. They're certainly on track to win the championship. Well,
like, that'd be fun. I mean, it'd be something to watch winning.
A wild ride.
I wouldn't mind that, actually. to be honest, what do I think of the interview? I want to be careful about how I answer this. So, Ed Woodward is probably being the most in demand individual for an interview amongst the British press pack for years. He doesn't give interviews for obvious reasons, for the same reason why Abramovich doesn't give them, for the same reason why the Glazers don't give them, because they don't have answers to questions. So a really odd place for Ed to pick to give this interview to. Now, Andy Mitten, someone I've known a long time. Congratulations to Andy for getting the interview. But
he blocked me on Twitter the other day.
Okay. Well, let me give you. I asked for Ed Woodward the same week Andy Mitten asked for him, and I was told by the club no. And the main reason being, I have really strong views on the club, and he didn't appreciate it. Well, of course, I've got strong views on the club, but they didn't like that. Now, a couple of weeks prior, leading up to this interview, United We Stand, that fanzine had written a couple of pretty nasty things about me, and it was in relation to my anti-Glazer comments. So I'm trying to, you piece your own, your own dots. So United We Stand are starting to criticize people who have anti-Glazer views. Somehow Manchester United found out about this, because I'm quite certain Ed Woodward doesn't monitor my timeline, nor does he monitor most people's timeline. So somehow Edward Wood was made aware of who was saying what, and quite certainly he doesn't listen to my podcast. So someone obviously told him. There was very deliberate targeting of people with anti-Glazer views in the United We Stand magazine. I asked Andy about this because they wrote things that were false about me. I got somewhat of an apology, not a complete apology. And bear in mind, this is someone I've known a long time and someone I consider a friend. they then printed another allegation against me, which is borderline libelous. And then they end up with an Ed Woodward interview when nobody else gets close to him. And I'm trying to work out, how did that happen? Why did Ed Woodward feel safe being interviewed by a fanzine whose raison d'etre is to actually hold the club to account and make sure that they're not just fanboys? That's the whole reason. For example, Ed Woodward was promised red issue. An interview, JP, years ago. And what happened is he backed out of it out of fear. Why did he not back out of Andy's? Why did he feel comfortable that he wasn't going to be challenged in a way that, say, Red Issue would have challenged him? I don't know. Only he knows. But it's a really, really odd place for Ed Woodward. I mean, it's one way of looking at it and giving him credit for doing it with a fanzine. But I'll let you connect your own dots on that.
No, totally makes sense, Phil. And, you know, part of the reason how I actually found your podcast was through your Twitter handle and how you kind of pull no punches for the ownership. We're the same way. And I think fans should be educating themselves on who's really to blame. You know, a billion out. You're looking at the management right now. Obviously, Woodward's kind of running the show. And we're going to be on the way to win the championship, right? Like you said. So how could why is it that the Manchester fan base is divided? I mean, this is an American ownership. You can see the numbers. Yeah. It's been put out, the debt, everything. Why are some fans overly defensive of the Glazers while others are, you know, spot on in criticizing them?
Well, look, it all depends. First of all, guys, culturally, Americans are much more accepting of sports being a revenue generator than what the British are.
Got it.
Right? So British people are they're still the mindset that these are community clubs and they were not used, they're not to be used for the purpose of making money. All my American friends are utterly perplexed at that and laugh at me. And they're like, what's the problem? You know, it's okay, it's just the cultural difference. They don't care. You know, but and truthfully, it's okay to make money out of a football club. It just can't be the priority. And
You can win and make money. Right?
The sole focus.
Yes, of course. So, and the thing is, the finance always wins. So, if, for example, United have a decision to make, let's say they've got a team good enough to qualify. They say, we've got a team good enough to get to the semi-final of the Champions League. But if we spent another $150 million or somewhere along those lines on two top players or one top player, we could win the Champions League. United will evaluate it like this. Okay, so the difference in prize money between the semi-final and the final is $12 million. Why would we spend $150 million to make 12? They don't care about the prestige of winning it and all the financial spin-offs, the potentials. They just look at it like that. That's why it's a problem. So I think that why the fan base is divided is because United have such a diverse fan base as it is, from people all over the world. I think the voices that are amplified on Twitter are not always the same as what you would get inside the stadium. I think there's been a very deliberate obfuscation from certain people in the media to suggest that what's being said on Twitter is not represented with what is felt in the hearts of Match Going fans, which to me is wrong. The difference is Neta fans there's a culture in how they support the football club. And we're at a crossroads in this culture because it was typically always you support the team no matter what. But football has changed so much now to where, as a fan, you almost have to be a part-time accountant and a part-time international lawyer. And all this nonsense, right?
Yeah, a part-time agent, you know.
Right, all this stuff, right? Because we can no longer just concentrate on watching the football for 90 minutes because there's so many other things going on outside the football club that affects it. And so the nature of football is changing. Also, the way people consume sports is changing. The younger generation just don't care the same way. You know, I mean, younger generation today, because of what we were saying earlier about video games and everything else, they'll support four or five different teams. They don't have the same loyalty. It's totally different. So getting the younger generation to care enough about this is difficult, because most people only care about things that directly impact their lives. And so can you get them to care enough about removing the Glazers? Many of them feel hopeless anyway, that they'll never get enough people to do it. And of course, in 2005, FC United started, and a lot of the militant part of the United's fan base went there.
I mean, as it relates to the Glazers, you think they're trying to play defense on acquisition bid?
I'm not sure what you mean by question.
Takeover? You think Woolworths trying to say everything's great because they're trying to get bought right now?
No. First of all, I think there's a couple of things. You know, this is his job. Woodward will be thinking about sponsors, right? So what you need to basically sell to sponsors is fan equity. They're saying to sponsors, come sponsor this football club. And as a result, our football fans, our United fans, will buy your products because they love this club so much. Well, it's difficult to sell that relationship with the sponsors at the moment, when as soon as United announce a sponsor, they're getting deluge of negative comments from people on Twitter, right? It's very difficult to say that, right?
Yeah.
And so so he wants to be on the offensive. It's no surprise during the international window, there was all sorts of leaks about United being interested in this player and that player and this player and that player, which, you know, then they'll come out in an interview and complain about them being linked with players when they're deliberately leaking this stuff, you know? And so I think with regards to being bought, there's only a few people capable of banning it. And when you look at those people, the four billion is changed on the back of the couch to them, right?
Bezos' ex-wife. That's who I'm lobbying right now.
Exactly, right?
She's got 70 bill, I think.
Yeah. So exactly, right? So Bezos' ex-wife, right? So someone like that, or you know, the Saudis that, you know, have ridiculous amounts of money, they're capable of buying the football club. They're not interested. They don't care about whether they're profitable or not. They don't care about the state of the stadium or anything, any of that, because they've just so much money, it's irrelevant to them. Putting a billion in the football club, which would completely transform United, is nothing to them. So I hate to say this, but I would almost rather keep the Glazers than go to the Saudis, because I think there's levels of turgidness. And as bad as the Glazers are, they're not decapitating gays, right?
That's true.
You know what I mean?
You're right.
They're not totally heinous things. I might dislike them, but they're not that.
Yeah,
and that really would give me
a dilemma. You know?
Yeah. I think there's a threshold for everybody to say, I've had enough. And I'd like to believe that would be my threshold of saying I've had enough, but I probably wouldn't, because supporting a football club defies all logic anyway.
Certainly true.
This is true.
So where do you see United finishing this season, Phil?
Well, that's a really, really good question. If you look at United's form since March, with its relegation form, right? Only Watford and Southampton have picked up less points. They've went 45 hours without having a midfielder score a goal, with the exception of Scott McTominay. Who do you see United beating? Their goal scorer? I mean, they don't score enough goals. It's
away form is terrible.
I'm worried about Norwich. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, they've 2 wins in 9 this season. It's appalling, and one of those was the first day of the season. I don't know where the next wins come from. Obviously, it's very important to get players back. But, you know, all of this was entirely predictable. Martial's constantly injured. Pogba has been injured every season he's been at United. United have an abundance of injuries, and they've had them since going back to Ferguson. All of this was entirely predictable. This is a self-made mess. They're in this because they didn't buy enough in the summer. They chose to hold on to their money. And their net spend, I think, is around 30, 40 million this summer, which for a club like United that allegedly, and I said this look back in March, I would not expect United to go out and buy five or six players. I don't think they have the competence at the club to do that. And so, and when you talk about direction and identity and everything, they've got no idea what they're doing. And Woodward today said, we've got football experts at the club. Who are they? I mean, I today learned that United have football experts. I'd love to know who they are.
I sent Woodward my resume. I haven't heard back yet.
I mean, I got
like 15 years of FIFA under my belt.
More experience than him.
If you'd have pressed him on that question, it wouldn't surprise me if you'd have turned around and said Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
probably do a better job than them.
No doubt. Yeah. Right? So, I don't know. Top 10?
What do you think? Bottom 10?
Honestly,
like 50-50, right? Top 10?
They don't spend in January. I'm going to say bottom half of the table.
Oof. You're tied in on the with some agent, so to speak, or some sources. You think they're really going to buy in January? I mean, next summer's Euro 2020. That's going to be a nightmare. And then we have January. Leicester ain't selling us anyone in January, especially if you had to pay that money for Maguire. I mean, you really think we can do some business?
Yeah, I think a Mandzukic would be someone that would interest in it because he's experienced. He is very different to what United have at the minute. United need someone to lift the place. He'd be short term. He's within the price range. I hate to say it. So I could definitely.
He's in the bargain bin, is what you're saying? Yeah.
Well, he should have been. They were offered him in the summer. This is again an illustration of the fact that the club don't really know what they're doing. They were offered him in the summer. They said no because he didn't fit what they wanted. Solskjaer was on the impression he's going to get someone else. Didn't
he's
get
a body. Anyone. He's a body who can kick a ball. I think that's on the list.
Well, look,
if you look at our bench,
you can fill out a jersey. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, he's. He would be an improvement, and but that's not hard. And so I think he would be someone that would improve the club, would give him a bit of a lift, and I could see something like that happening, even though, in my opinion, they badly need a midfielder before they need a striker because, you know, if you actually go to the games, you'll see United's forward players make a lot of runs and never get picked out. So unless you've got someone that can load the gun, then I think they'll struggle no matter what. And, you know, so unless they get a good midfielder, and I don't see where that's coming from. I'm talking about Emre Can. Emre Can can't get in Juventus Champions League squad. I mean, it's absolutely pathetic.
And, you know, hey, Paul Pogba waiting for that world-class form. but look, Phil, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast. You've been answering all the questions being thrown at you. Look, Phil is the host of the Beyond the Pitch podcast. He features on Talk Sport. Any other things I'm missing, Phil, that you're involved in?
I'm cartels and stuff like that. I obviously do my Talk Sport and, my BTP, I do media all over the place for people in the UK, for people in Asia and stuff. So it's something I've been, my podcast is 10 years old this week.
Congrats. Yeah. Congrats.
Thank you. So it's been a great journey and I've loved it. It's so I've got to work with people I never imagined possible. I've got to interview people I never imagined possible. So it's been a great journey. And you lads keep up the great work. Keep doing what you're doing. And keep flying the flag out here. And I'll be happy to come on anytime.
We appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
And
that was Phil Brown, legendary Manchester United fan and pundit. Sir, what did you make of that?
Great to have Phil on the podcast. True honor. A lot of good insight about, you know, what's going on with Woodward, how the decision-making goes past. Yeah.
Get Woodward's email.
We can probably hack that email, I think.
Yeah, I got to send him my resume, like I said. Look, this is a special podcast. We're trying to pack a lot in here. We got a lot of fixtures coming off international break. So as they say in Vegas, a lot of action, sir. A lot of action here. Next match, that's right. You thought Liverpool was everything, but it's not. We got Partizan Belgrade versus Manchester United at the Partizan Stadium in Autokomanda. Wakanda forever. Belgrade, Serbia, sir.
It's a haul, sir. It's not close. Haul.
Not close at all. 32,000 the stadium seats. That will be Thursday, October 24th. Kickoff, 9:55 a.m. Pacific. That's right. It's Europa League match week 3. Mark your calendar, sir. How are you feeling about this Europa League tie? Got to do some traveling.
Travel is not going to be easy. And then we got another game coming around the weekend with Norwich away. But hey, looking forward to getting a victory. You know, it's been a little bit too long since we've had a win, so the boys could use a morale boost. But this could be a not so fun game to go travel to.
Look, Jose Mourinho said it. Europa League is the number one way that Manchester United can qualify for next year's Champions League tournament. So for us really worrying about Liverpool, you know, how far are we down the table? We should be focused probably on Europa League. This has got to be a tournament. I said earlier in the podcast, we shouldn't care about it. We should focus on the league. Given how far we've fallen, you think mid-table is probably what our expectations should be as far as where we can finish. So why not go for it in Europa League?
I mean, it's probably the best shot we have. Top four is definitely out of reach, I think, given our run in form and the fact that we didn't strengthen like we should have in the summer. So
Europa League, no, you never know.
We can always give it a run.
I'm all in our Europa League now. I was hating on it. Like the first two games, I was hating on it. Now I look at us in the league table, all in.
Can't wait for Partizan and Belgrade. It's gonna be a belter of a match.
You're gonna win the Europa. If you think about it that way, you might be a little more excited about this match. That's right. Partizan Belgrade, this is their name in Serbian, Fudbalski Klub Partizan. So in English, Partizan Belgrade is the name. Serbian professional football club based in Belgrade. Seems pretty obvious. It forms a major part of the Partizan multi-sport club, and the club plays in the Serbian Superliga, not to be mixed up with La Liga, and has spent its entire history in the top tier of Serbian football, having won 45 official trophies, 27 Serbian championships, 16 Serbian cups, 1 Serbian Super Cup, 1 Mitropa Cup, and they finished the Yugoslav League all-time table as second. So quite a resume there. So as far as in Serbia, they're a big deal. As far as the rest of the world, no one's ever heard of them. Partizan was founded by young high officers of the Yugoslav People's Army in 1945 in Belgrade as part of the Yugoslav Sports Association Partizan. Their home ground is the Partizan Stadium in Belgrade. Like we had mentioned, seats the 35K. The club, this was one thing I found interesting. They have a long-standing rivalry with Red Star Belgrade. Matches between these two clubs are known as the Eternal Derby. I thought that was a great name for a rivalry, sir. Basically, the Daily Mail ranked the Red Star Partizan Derby 4th among the top 10 greatest football rivalries of all time.
I'm sure it kicks off. Those fans probably get really into that.
The firms of those clubs might murder each other after that match. I don't know, but it's the Eternal Derby. Sounds pretty intense. And the club's official nickname is the Steamroller. Manchester United played Partizan Belgrade last in 1966. And most recently, sir, this is not good news, but a hot topic in football has been sort of the resurgence or continuation of racism in Europe in football matches. And England did feel that over international break. That was a huge controversy. And Partizan actually served a 2-game suspension and had to play its last two European fixtures behind closed doors due to racial abuse. And this could be a storyline coming out of this match because the Partizan Belgrade manager, Savo Milicevic, has actually called to the fans to say, we have to be proud to host Manchester United. We cannot, disgrace our fan base with racism. And so it's one of those things when you get to that far east segment of Europe, you kind of see some disturbing things from the fans.
And they certainly got a track record. Hopefully they can be on their best behavior when we show up on Thursday because we don't want any kind of negative press like that marring a great result like game week 3 in Europa League.
There's no place for that from the fans. It's just seeing England players go through that, it's classless, sir. Just quick update on the standings. Manchester United are number two. Partizan is number one, tied on 4 points each. But the I would say the goal differential is better for Partizan right now. It's actually goal differential is tie break at one each, but the goals for is in Partizan's favor, 4-1. So they are number one on the table. This game will decide it. Clearly, it's away. Some may say a draw would do the job, but look, this is Europa League. We got to win, right?
No, we got to win. You know, we haven't had a win in a while. We haven't had a win away in a while, so this would be a big victory.
We'll go
an easy place to go to, right? Distance alone. It's going to be an intimidating atmosphere with all their away fans going nuts. Hopefully they can keep it kosher and we don't deviate and have any kind of bad, ugly,
expect
ugly
some road flares in the road flares in the crowd.
Flares that they score for sure.
And look, we can win this game. We can go three points clear of Partizan. If AZ Alkmaar wins, they might be 5 points. We'd be 2 points clear, but a win away here would cement United's pole position in this group and going on to the next round of the Europa League where we can qualify for Champions League. So I think we got to put a lot of efforts in. I don't want Ole to completely put out a full use side. You got to really think. I know it seems like the press, everyone's worried about Norwich, but as a club, I mean, we got to be winning this tournament, right? We got to get Champions League football at all costs.
We got to take it seriously because it is a chance to actually win some silverware. It's a chance to qualify for the Champions League next year. So probably our team couldn't compete this year, but you know, we're gonna have reinforcements hopefully in January next summer. But it's a competition we want to be in. Allows you to track the best players throughout Europe, and we are missing out on that right now. And certainly goes a long way for sponsorships as well, sir. I know that Chevrolet is worth a lot less when we're not playing in the Champions League.
Very happy Chevrolet is leaving. I couldn't be happier, sir. I've been waiting a long time to buy a new kit. Tactics real quick. Partizan's been playing the 4-2-3-1. Happens to be Ole's favorite. Their top players, Umar Sadiq, their center forward, has 5 goals on the season. And the man we need to worry about, their number 10, Seduba Soma, he has 4 goals with 5 assists. In the 4-2-3-1, obviously the number 10 is key. Manchester United, we've been lacking that, and they seem to have it. So you're going to look at Soma in the middle and then Sadiq making runs in behind. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is probably going to counter with the 4-2-3-1. The question is, how much youth does he feature? Are we really giving players days off, or should we be prioritizing Europa League? I think the tides are tilting. A win against Liverpool might have changed a little bit, changed the math for me. But when you're looking at Europa League, this is how we're going to get, I mean, and the board too. If you think about it from the Glazers' perspective, this is how we're going to get paid. We win this competition, we get silverware, and we're going to the Champions League. I think you got to take it serious.
More importantly, we need a win. We just need to change the sentiment because
this
the
is
draw,
true, sir.
The draw helped, but we need a win, and it's been a long time since we got an away win. So going to Serbia and getting the win on the road, I think we'll do a lot to lift some spirits around Old Trafford because fans are desperate. You know, it's been a long time since we had something to celebrate. We could have had all 3 points on Sunday, but it wasn't meant to be, sir.
Sir, when you mentioned Serbia, he's come from Serbia.
Fucking
Nemanja. Happy birthday, Nemanja Vidic, today, actually, sir. So we're talking about Serbia. Will he be at the game? I bet he'll probably be at the game. Does he even live in Serbia?
Hard to say.
Probably lives in LA down by the beach somewhere. I hope Nemanja Matic is getting some sun, relaxing on his birthday. A lot of injuries, sir. Physioroom.com. Checking in there. Eric Bertrand. Bye. Love that middle name. EBB for short, sir. That knee injury, he's out. Long-term, mid-December. Pogba. Hard to say. Pogba says he's almost ready to come back. Doing the battle ropes. Then he shows up in crutches to Old Trafford. Not on the team sheet. Does he even play for Manchester United anymore at this point? I mean,
he's still getting the check.
He wants to leave. He's getting paid. Doesn't even play. This is the Pog saga for everyone listening. This is kind of can end with a whimper.
It's been really a long time coming, sir. It's like on again, off again relationship with Paul Pogba. We it hasn't been a story in the press for a couple weeks.
It's been a long time, sir. I've been waiting on Paul P. He's cashing those checks. Jesse Lingard, another man cashing those checks. Got that thigh injury. He's out till December 27th. Luke Shaw. He could come back, sir. Luke Shaw might be in the mix. He was quoted by Ole not too long away, so I doubt he's going to start. It could be a surprise comeback from injury. Tuan Zabi, no update on him. It's the groin or hip injury. Nemanja Matic, no return date there. Timothy Fatu-Mensah, no return date, and Dalot, no return date.
Quite a list, sir. Quite a list of injuries.
The bodies are building up, and so I guess I have to correct the record. I did say I'd like to see Matic on the bench against Liverpool. He is injured, so I am... I know nothing, Jon Snow.
Sir, we don't have a lot of options as it comes to picking a starting 11.
Yeah, no, it's getting there, sir. So given our options, you got a starting 11. Who's going to make it at Belgrade, sir?
So we got Sergio Romero in net, the best number two in the game. I'm going to do a back four of... We're going to do Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right back. We're going to do Marcus Rojo and Phil Jones. What a pair. And Ashley Young at left back. And then a midfield of Scott McTominay, Fred, and Andres Pereira. And then a front three of Gomez, Greenwood, and Marcus Rashford.
All right, sir. My starting 11, Romero. I'm going... I got Ashley Young at right back. McGuire, Jones, Williams at left back. I got McTominay, Fred, Mata, Rashford on the left, Greenwood at number nine, Pereira on the right. I think I'm going to go with the 4-2-3-1 because I think Ole's just got to play that. So also would like to see Pereira at 10. I think of all the players you got to play again, probably McGuire. Clearly, I think Williams, he came in that game. I think he's going to feature him at left back. Ashley Young's got to play again, right? There's no way around that. Dalot's injured. McTominay, I think he's got to play again, unless you want to put Gardner in there. I could see McTominay, Gardner midfield. Fred, he's just dying on the vine out there. So interesting lineup, sir. Interesting take. Booking the bookies. Interesting odds here. I mean, you want to look to the footballing gods or the footballing bookies. Manchester United +124 to win. Partizan +187. The draw +207. Remember when Liverpool came to Manchester United, Manchester United were +3 something. To have us be +24, Partizan only +187. We're going to their house, and it's like every other... Remember we played AZ, the odds were through the roof for them to win, +800. And now, I mean, Astana was like +1600.
I mean, it's not
Partizan is
not an easy place to place, or not an easy place to get a result.
That's what the bookies are telling us. It could be the atmosphere. It's going to rattle the players away. I think the draw to be +207, that's probably the best bet I would think here.
I'm not touching any of these lines, sir. You know, the form that we're in these days, you know, it's hard to bet Manchester United win, especially on the road.
Think about this: in the Champions League, we're playing young boys. Manchester United to win. For young boys to win at home against us was like +850 or something like that. And they were in the Champions League. This is Europa League and Partizan's +187. So that shows you that's like...
Oh, the mighty have fallen, sir.
The odds are saying that Partizan's got a real shot here. This is interesting. So given that, the odds are tilted like that, sir. What is your score prediction? Who do you think is going to win?
Sir, I'm going to call it the nervy game, 1-0. Penalty, but it does the job and we get the win away and, you know, break that winless streak on the road.
I'm going to say 3-1 Manchester United, sir. We have been dying on the vine up front. We're going to finally break through, score some goals. Ball's going to bounce our way.
I like the sound of that.
You know, something's got to go easy for us, right? We've been grinding all year, and Maguire's going to get a header on a set piece. I'll call that too. I was hoping, I was like, we were playing Liverpool. I was like, Maguire's going to get his first goal, header. On one of these corners. No, not a chance. Not a chance. United in the news. Interesting articles here. One from Jamie Carragher who said, quote, Liverpool made a mistake on the Suarez t-shirts, unquote. I thought this was a big statement from Jamie Carragher. Clearly, they got it wrong on the Suarez support after he was racist towards Patrice Evra. Really disgusting stuff. Suarez at his low. It's very low. Biting players, spitting on people, being racist towards Patrice Evra, the lack of just humanity for Luis Suarez. Hey, the man can score a goal, but do not forget the shenanigans he's pulled has not made his country look good, has not made himself look good. And famously, when he was being, was basically had shown racist behavior towards Patrice Evra, all the Liverpool players came out in a warm-up and supported him with a shirt with his... Big ugly mug on it. And for Jamie Carragher to come out and say that was wrong, I thought that was... It's actually... People don't do this enough, you know?
It's just about time. Like, hey, it's about that. Time. It's like 10 years late, but, you know, it's better late than never. They were certainly on the wrong side of history by doing that. But, you know, it's... Big a character to finally admit that they were off.
But who was it? Jordan Henderson tweeted out something about racism because obviously I believe this week They're doing a no racism in football campaign. Jordan Henderson tweeted that out, and he famously wore the Suarez shirt. So it's kind of like, are we really forgetting this happened? And it was an interesting time. And Liverpool, I mean, to wear those shirts, that was just like
what were you thinking?
He should have been like suspended by the club, shouldn't have been able to play. He should have to apologize to Patrice Evra. Instead, they backed him. That was one of those like bizarro, like I was being in America, you're watching that happen in the UK, and you're like, what?
Their whole team was built on Suarez at the moment at that point.
Yeah, so, I guess
I think that was it. They were just so reliant on him as a player and a goal scorer that they had no other option but to back him.
Next article here. Patrice Evra confirms important talks, quote, important talks with Ed Woodward on important role per Manchester Evening News. Patrice Evra, he has been involved in the club as of late, training with the youth and obviously going to quite a bit of games. What do you think about this important role? It might be sort of a football director liaison, nice guy, pushover. What do you think? I love Evra.
I'm a big fan of Evra. I think he has a history of usually calling it like it is. But you know, if he's going to be appointed by Ed Woodward, it's going to be some kind of cushy cover job. I don't think it's going to be director of football, maybe another ambassador to the game, but it's hard to say what kind of role he's going to have and whether he's going to be involved in the footballing, decisions at the top. I don't see it happening.
There's been so many rumors out of the club, but I heard that they might be having almost a board of players like Scholes, Evra, Van der Sar, and have them kind of be the sort of advisors basically they would hang out with Ed Woodward and tell him what to do, and then Ed Woodward would take all the credit. I think that's kind of how it goes. So
not listen to them.
Ed Woodward, I'll email you later about it.
Send them a resume.
Next article, per the Daily Record. This has kind of been in the headlines, kind of started before the Liverpool game. But this rumor says Manchester United send delegation to Saudi Arabia as pressure mounts on irritated Glazers. The club is valued at $2.6 billion right now in New York Stock Exchange, but could trade north of $3 billion. The rumor is a bid of $3 billion from the Saudis, which was rejected by the Glazers. They're playing hardball. They said, we will not sell at any price. Classic American tell that you would sell. You just got to overpay for it. Essentially, what Saudi Arabia is doing is they've seen what Qatar has done with PSG and Abu Dhabi has done with Manchester City and are keen to follow a similar strategy. Buy the football club, use it as a marketing tool for the country and political purposes. Sir, it has worked for Abu Dhabi and Qatar. Clearly, Qatar Airways, I wouldn't have heard of them if it wasn't for football. You know, these things, if you think about it, America should be buying up some clubs, and maybe Crystal Palace, the Eagles.
Sir, I don't know how keen you're going
to
be to buy
a kit
when it says visit Saudi Arabia instead of Chevrolet, sir. That could be where we go.
I would not be buying that kit either. So again, Phil did allude to this one. How far up the chain do you need to go to sell your soul for a better football club? And you know, I do like how Chelsea's owned by a Russian billionaire. And when we talk to the fans, they got nothing to say about it.
They got no problem with it.
You know, and when you talk to the city supporters, there aren't really many of them out here. But if you would talk to them, it'd all be about how they cheated. They stole money. They broke UEFA guidelines, etc. And I don't think the Glazers have taken a lot of money out of the club. They are capitalists, interested in making money. But as far as just like general, seediness, they're definitely a tier below that other cast of characters, right? And I do like that better than associating ourselves with somebody.
Phil said there are levels to this, so there's human rights abuses, and then there's just like pure-blooded capitalism.
Greed.
Greed is great.
And then,
there are lines, there are divisions in the sand, sir.
Yeah, so again, we'll keep you posted on all this stuff. Again, more smoke here. I don't see any real bit happening. The club is doing horribly. I think the Glazers are going to need to reinvest and get it to a much higher value to sell. I think that will be the challenge. And again, it would have to take a crazy offer for them to sell at the moment. So we will keep posted. Jumping in fan questions. You guys had some good ones after Liverpool match. At Karthik Vasan on Twitter, quote, capture the spirit of at Dan James 97. In a bottle and let everyone sniff it before game time, end quote.
So he's got what it takes to be a top player at Manchester United. He's got the work ethic. I mean, he got knocked out like twice in this game, just absolutely clobbered football style, and he just kept running all over the pitch. Hey, if we could see that from 11 players week in, week out, we would certainly finish in the top half of the table.
think he needs a rest. I think Dan James needs a rest. Got hit
don't
the
don't
head.
Send him to Belgrade.
He's got hit in the head a little too many times this week. He needs to relax. Next question at Dave Paws on Twitter. Quote, great performance. Glad Ole changed the formation. If we had more options, we would have won. That's now let's hope we can build on the momentum and start climbing the table, sir. End quote. What do you think?
I mean, I think it starts with a big win against Belgrade on Thursday and then going to Norwich to get another win. So we need to just start the momentum up again, get some, you know, tie some performances together. I think.
Exactly. We draw Liverpool, we lose to Norwich and Bournemouth.
It doesn't matter.
We're going to be there at Bournemouth. So we're probably
going to be cold. Going to be rainy.
It's going to be great. If we lose, it'll be worth a trip anyway. Have another dark ale, sir. Next question at Obliquist on Twitter. Quote, has Ole finally learned how to set up the team in a way which suits our squad? Question mark. Everyone turned up today. Pereira man in the match.
I mean, I like that he, you played up to absorb pressure and then going for the counter. I don't think you want to play three at the back when you go against a Norwich, but hey, I could be wrong.
Sir, anyone could be wrong, even Ed Woodward. At RonB324 on Twitter, quote, did they get tired or did Ole have them back off? We don't defend well enough to park the bus, and it showed. Frustrating to watch the guys get after it in the first half and then revert back kind of to the team we've been watching the last month or so in the second half.
I mean, I think we ran out of gas in this game. It was simple as that. We're going full-footed the whole game, and then you have no one to shore up the midfield when, you know, it was very clear that we needed to maybe bring off Pereira. He was starting to fade. Fred was certainly fading. So not having any kind of options on the bench is certainly hurting us. So, Eddie, what are you doing? What do you do every day?
And finally, at ADRN87 on Twitter, quote, camera fucking loves Klopp, unquote.
They showed him 10 times as many, 10 times as often as they showed Ole. A lot of those teeth, man. We couldn't even believe that those teeth fit into his mouth. They're so big.
I don't know what is with you and Klopp's teeth.
They
sir.
Look fake. They look like a. I mean, he definitely set of dentures.
The only thing about his teeth I've noticed, he grinds his teeth. That can't be good for you. The dentist says you
they're
shouldn't
enormous.
Do that. You should wear maybe a mouth guard on the sidelines there. Look, sir, it's been a hell of a podcast. I think we're going on a record length of time here, maybe over an hour and 10 minutes in. We had the quick Liverpool recap. We had Phil Brown on, and then we're recapping Partizan Belgrade. It is good to have football back. I am happy. Manchester United going in for hard challenges. Got the draw, but you look at the boys, there's something to build on. Let's do it. Let's get some points in Serbia, sir.
Can't wait, sir. It's going to be a spicy atmosphere, I'm sure.
And look, this podcast, just jumping the housekeeping. Oh, we got the best fans in the world. That's the one thing I said pre, post Liverpool on Twitter, engaging the American Red Devils out there. We have the best fans in the world. This club has the best fans in the world. And when you're surrounded by a community like that, the ups and the downs, it's entertaining to go through, right? You have every point of view. You have the people who want to jump off a cliff. You have people looking on the bright side. But we all love Manchester United, and it's something that unites us. And it's great to see online. I mean, it's an amazing community.
I don't care what place they're in, sir. I'm always going to be rooting for Manchester United. You know, as Phil jokes, we could be winning the championship. That could be the next trophy we win. But even if they drop down, I am going to be watching every game because they're the only team I got in my heart, sir.
Yeah, it's 10 p.m. Pacific in the bunker, and we're here grinding.
We're still going, baby. Still going.
The wives upset, already gone to bed, but we're here grinding, giving you this content, and it's a pleasure to do it, sir. I love chatting about Manchester United. We'd probably talk like this even if we didn't have a podcast, so it's that's kind of getting it out. It's therapy here.
Might as well bottle it up and send it out to the masses.
Look, appreciate everyone. We have amazing downloads, top cities last 7 days, sir. Hit us off with the list. Start us,
sir. Number one is a familiar spot, Thousand Oaks, California. How you doing? Number two, Florence, South Carolina. And number three, Trois Rivières, Canada. How you doing?
That means Three Rivers in French,
I think you're
sir.
Right, sir.
We're talking about
French major
Canada.
Over here.
Number four, LA, California, El Trafico. What's up? Number five, Hotlanta. Atlanta, Georgia coming in. And then number six, UK on the board, Bladen on Tyne, United Kingdom. Enjoy it, sir. Finish us off.
Sir, number seven, San Francisco, California. Number eight, New York, New York. Number nine, Preston, UK. And last but not least, Langley, Canada. Appreciate all the downloads. Another record week. And just bringing the masses, you know, what they want to hear. The hot band, sir. That's what it's all about.
Dude, Scouse Bastards got lucky. Something tells me I'm going to watch when they play City. That's going to be a good game. I hope they lose, and then they're cutting already cutting the lead hard.
But they won the league already, sir.
It's un. That's the first thing I texted my buddy who's a Liverpool fan. First of all, I was so pissed. I wanted to make fun of him about the win because he thought he was going to smash us. And then I realized this is a draw. I was like, look, you guys think you're already won the league and you show up at Old Trafford. Like, the reason why Klopp was so mad is because he knew that the boys showed up, played like shit.
Yep.
They looked rattled. They couldn't handle it. It's like, you have that much swag coming in that game, playing against that team with no Paul Pogba, and you're going to be that nervous about it? And it's like, get out of town, son. Van Dijk looked human against Marcus Rashford.
He certainly did. We could have used those 3 points, though. That would have been something great, just rubbing their faces.
Sir, that's such is life. Sometimes the VAR gods
smile on you.
Sometimes they don't, just like Arsenal. But, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Again, some chances we could have taken. Also, Liverpool, they did get more shots. They had a lot more of the ball. So 1-1, you know, we'll take it.
Probably fair.
If somebody before the game going in, sentiment, of course, you would have taken the draw.
That's what was great about this game is that, you know, when they came out and put a decent performance together in the first half, they actually dominated play. You're disappointed by a 1-1 draw. It's amazing how fast things change based on a little bit of good gameplay.
So we're already getting back in the game. And then we haven't even talked about the fact this podcast, we do sponsor free and you can support us. This is how our advert to support the pod makes it an hour and 15 minutes in. So it's the last thing we talk about. We just have so much fun doing it that, you know, the merch just really goes to support our efforts. We have costs hosting the podcast. We have equipment that we are maintaining here in the bunker. We're trying to do more things. So help us by supporting us and getting and buying some merchandise at www.AmericanRebelsRedDevils.com. Click on store. We got some Glazers out stuff. We really need that right now. And we're actually working on some logo t-shirts. We sent out a survey. Appreciate everyone who responded to that. We'll probably get the mugs too. But again, we love doing this and we think the best way is to get your support directly, right? That makes so much sense versus us peddling things and putting ads in the middle of the pod. So for us, we're open to any and all feedback. Tweet us at USA Red Devils on Twitter. Email us AmericanRedDevils@gmail.com. And also, if you want to do a review, you can't spend a few bucks on a shirt or a pin or anything we got on there. Drop us a review on iTunes. We're close to 200, sir. That'd be almost an amazing milestone. Almost we're five there. Stars. Drop a review. We'll get you a free sticker. Again, appreciate everyone who just listens, right? Subscribe, listen. That's supporting the pod. That's going a long way. And let's hope the lads can do a job, sir.
So really bring the noise on Thursday, sir, because we got a big match. We need a win against Belgrade.
Partisan Belgrade, here we come. And as always,
kicking a blue.